You're fine.
Hi, everybody. I'm Suzanne. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Suzanne.
It's good to be here. It was a beautiful, lovely ride here. I think I'm going to wait till the spring and come back again. Anyway, I'm from Richmond. I was born and raised there. I've never moved. In fact, I don't think any of my family has ever moved. I've got a huge family. I have a home group. It's Parkview. It's on Tuesday nights at 7 o'clock. It's a speaker meeting. And it's been there. We're getting ready to celebrate 43 years at the same church. It's really great. We've been there the whole time. They've renovated it. It really looks nice. I have a sponsor that I talked to before I came. I have one of my pigeons here, Mary Beth. My husband Henry came up with me, and my sobriety date is October the 3rd, 1979. So I've been here a little while. Like I said, I grew up in Richmond, and I had two outstanding parents. My father was a great provider. My mother was a woman of faith, of great faith, actually. And I just hope that I'm a little bit like her. They've passed on now, but I had a good childhood. I grew up doing a lot of different things. They took us places. It was happy. I have three sisters and a brother, and I didn't realize what I had then. It was that kind of thing. I just didn't know what I had. In fact, today I'm like, gosh, I'd really like to do that over again and realize what I had. But I didn't know that, but I found out later on. So that's the good news. So I always wanted to be somebody. So I wanted to matter. So what I did was I tried to do everything I could do to be somebody. And whether it was playing piano, dancing lessons, cheerleading, I made pretty good grades. The last year, 12th grade, I managed to make pretty good grades, but I had already started drinking, so it really did affect those that year. Because all I wanted to do was drink. I really didn't want to study. I managed to be, I guess I was smart enough to pass everything, but and I did with pretty good grades, but I didn't want to study. If I'd had to study, I probably would have not done it and probably failed. But fortunately enough, I guess I had a little bit of smarts. So like I said, I wanted to be somebody, so I went out to do that, and my father was, well, I just idolized my father, and I wanted him to love me. I just wanted him to love me so much, and I looked up to him, and he was a good father. Now, he did drink, but he wasn't the kind of drunk that went out or anything. He was always at home. We had a, they had a great marriage. I don't think my mom and dad ever really quarreled, except maybe one time that I can remember. They just, my mother was, she would sing if daddy was mad at her, and she would just sing, and he would just mope around for a while, and then it would all be gone. It was no arguing. I didn't even know how to have an argument with anybody, although I did have a temper. And I managed to learn how to have those arguments with all my boyfriends. I managed to fuss with them. I felt comfortable with that, I guess. But anyway, I had three sisters, and we never really quarreled. We played and had fun. And anyway, I can remember a little bit later in life when I went to church, okay, every Sunday, every Wednesday, every night we were always at church, Southern Baptist Church. And there were so many things that I was told I wasn't supposed to do. And I wanted to do all of them. I wanted to do everything, put on makeup, wear a bikini, all that kind of stuff. I used to have to put on clothes over top of my bikini to get out of the house so my daddy wouldn't see me. It was fun. It was fun. I just, those memories are so wonderful. So I wanted to do all those things. And, I didn't think that I could ever have a problem with alcohol. So anyway, it was one night, my junior year in high school. No, 10th grade. It was a 10th grade. And I was at the mosque. I know it's called Altria now, but it's always the mosque to me because I did my dance and recitals there. And so we were there to dance and we had a band and it was a lot of fun. And the boy I was with was a football player, and I was the cheerleader, and oh, everything is just perfect. Well, it was more perfect when I took that first drink. When I took that first drink, I went, wow, I'm not nervous. I'm not scared. I feel pretty. Alcoholism can make me feel ugly. It doesn't matter what I look like on the outside. It makes me feel ugly inside. And so I had a lot of low self-esteem because of that. And it took away my ability to rationalize, and thinking that I was a bad person. I really thought I was a bad person, but I realized later on that I wasn't that good at being bad. So, I just thought I was a horrible person and I had such low self-esteem. And so I hung out with all these people. It was a bunch of us who would hang out together. And we'd go to bars and we'd have parties at different people's houses. And we knew this guy that had a boat. In fact, Mary Beth knew him. And we'd get all piled up on his boat and we go, boating around. It was a huge, big boat. So we like to use people that had boats to have fun. And that's what we did. We're always finding somebody else that somebody else had that we could use to have a good time. So I hung out with them all the time, and it was drinking and more drinking and more drinking. I mean, that's all I wanted to do was drink. I mean, once I took that first drink, I don't think I ever took a social drink. I think that drink from the very beginning that was it. No more social drinking. I drank anytime I get a chance. We'd ride around in the car with three of my friends at school and drank wine. What is it called? I can't remember the Boone's Farm. Ripple. Ah, Ripple. Love the Ripple. Pink Passion, I think it was called. That was my favorite. So that's all we could really manage to get when I was in high school was Ripple and maybe some Boone's Farm. What is it? Manischewitz, something, that dark stuff. And well, anyway, we drink anything that had alcohol in it. And it was fun. I had a good time. I can't say I had a bad time. But my behavior started changing my senior year. And after I've been drinking, for a year. And then, so I tried out for cheering. I've been a cheerleader since I was in junior high school. And I didn't make it. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm heartbroken. Oh, now I won't be anybody. I'm not a cheerleader with the bird brain I had. So anyway, that was devastating to me. Of course, that threw me into drinking more and more. I went to VCU and didn't feel like I fit in. All the people that I went to school with, Highland Springs and high school, I felt like I fit in with them. But when I went to VCU, I didn't because I'm in the throes of my disease. I'm in the classes and the class, I felt like everybody was looking at me. That terrible self-centered fear that I've experienced with this disease. The big book says we have thousands of fears and we don't even realize it. So the self-centeredness and feeling like people were looking at me is all that was it. They were not paying any attention to me. They might have paid a little bit of attention to me when I walked across the courtyard. I was telling you, I went there, and I never wore jeans. When I was in school, everybody wore skirts and dresses and stuff. I didn't really have a pair of jeans. So I would wear these two-piece outfits, and it was leopard. I mean, I've been wearing leopard since I was in high school. And I'd have this big hair piece on my head, big old blonde hair piece. And I don't know, y'all probably all too young to remember those
Oh,
big
no.
hair pieces. You know, and I had that, and I had on all this makeup and big earrings and boots, and I had a pair of boots in every color because I worked at a shoe store, and I managed to, you know, take a few of those from time to time. And you know, I was a thief. Yep, I was a thief. I wanted what I wanted. I wanted everything. I wanted more of everything. And no matter what I got, I still wanted more. You know, let me think. Oh, I got that. Let me think of something else that I want. Okay, I want. Well, you know, that's the ego. You know, and the ego means easing God out. And, you know, over the years since I've been sober, I've realized more lately than any time, and I've been here 46 years. It'll be 47 years in October. That my ego runs me a lot of the times. You know, I was so nervous to come up here and speak. I don't like to speak, but I want to speak. Does it make any sense? You know, I want the attention, but I'm scared to death. You know, and that's a definition of the alcoholism with me. And so I got all upset and stomach was hurting and all this stuff. I called my sponsor and she says, "Just your ego, Suzanne, put it down." You know, and I have a hard time with that. So that's something that I'm working on with her now, with my higher power, to live, not live from my ego, but live from my soul and the love of God and the love for other people. And I found that in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll tell you one little story and then I'm going to move on to recovery because I've been sober a lot longer than I drank. We were out with those friends again at the river. It was a place on the river that was kind of actually, I think the place my father owned it, but it didn't have any furniture in it. He bought it because he wanted it, but we never fixed it up or anything. So we were down there drinking and having a good time, and it was like the evening. It was dark, and you know, my boyfriend was there, and he was ignoring me. You know, the whole day he's ignored me, and he never did that. And I thought he's mad at me about something. I don't know what it is. So I went over to him and I said, "I hate you," and he said, "I hate you too." I said, "I'm going to kill myself." He said, "Go for it." So I reach in my purse with all the manner of medicine and stuff like that I carried around. Was alcohol is my drug of choice, but I did a lot of other stuff too. Now, this is an AA meeting. I won't talk about that, but you know, I did anything I could get my hands on. But alcohol was my drug of choice. And so I pulled out something and opened the bottle and took them in my hand and took the water and swallowed it and ran out the door. So I said, I'm going to run over here. Well, anyway, I ran over and there was this shack over there on the property, like a little shed kind of thing. And I ran in there and I laid down and I'm thinking, oh my God, I bet there's spiders in here. You know, I'm down on the ground and my head's down like this. I was like, oh, I don't really like this, but I can't go back. I can't. So anyway, I laid there and laid there and I'm like, I don't know what I took. I have no idea what's going to happen, but I was not going to get up. My pride would not let me get up because I told him I was going to kill myself. So a little while later, I hear these voices. Well, she said she was going to kill herself. Well, we got to find her. And they had their flashlights and stuff and walking around. They said, "There she is." And they, you know, when they went to pick me up, I acted like I was dead. You know, I was a drama queen, of course. And they picked me up and carried me in the house. And I think on the way to the house, I started moving a little bit to let them know that I was, you know, that I was still alive. So they threw me in the shower with my clothes on and everything. And next day, I just picked up the drink again, just started drinking again. No big deal. You know, but that was my way of getting attention. You know, I could get it negatively or positively. It didn't matter how I got it. I just wanted it. And when I was dancing one time, I laugh at this so much now, but it was like six or eight of us on the dance floor on the stage at the mosque, and at the end you had to turn. Everybody turned around like this, and I kept turning around and made myself be right in the middle in the front. I said, when I thought about that later, I said, "Good golly, Suzanne, what an ego you have!" So anyway, I'm trying to calm that damn thing down. Excuse me, I know I'm not supposed to cuss. Please forgive me. Oh, I won't cuss anymore. So anyway, you know, it's like this whole program has given me so I know who I am today. It's taken me a long time to find out, years. Now I work when I came in, let's put me inside recovery. I was very, very depressed. my mother had told me that if I didn't stop drinking or get some help, that I was going to have to leave the house, which I'd been living at home the whole time. I never got married. I'm like 28 years old, didn't have any children, just want to be at home, you know. And I ate their food, I drove their cars. The car they gave me, I wrecked their cars. And so I had this little, I don't think I had a car at that particular time. I don't remember, but I, you know, and I couldn't keep a job. I'd go to work, but I'd be so hungover. I had the worst hangovers in the world. I mean, you know, that kind of just gagging over the toilet. But about 3 o'clock, I'm ready to, you know, pick up another drink and maybe a cigarette, because I was a cigarette smoker. And I'm gonna tell you, trying to smoke a cigarette early in the morning with that hangover was impossible, because I smoked a lot. And I quit smoking in 91, which has been such a joy that I did. I'm gonna tell you, it was one of the hardest things I've ever done. I really, really was hard for me. So I'm trying to think where I was. Where was I?
You're wrecking cars.
Oh yeah, wrecking cars. Yep. I was wrecking cars, and my mother said, "Look, you're gonna have to get some help, Sue. And if not, you have to leave." And I didn't have a job. I didn't have any money. I didn't have a car. And so I went out that night with all my friends, and I got really drunk. I had to get drunk. You know, I might not be able to drink tomorrow. So I got really drunk, and something beautiful happened to me. It was a spiritual experience. I went outside to the phone booth. That y'all know what that is, the phone booth with glass and stuff, and called my mother, and I told her that I was willing to get some help. And I told her, I said, "I'm willing to get some help if you'll pay my Exxon bill." I always had good credit. Somehow I managed to pay my bills. I borrowed from one and pay the other one. My daddy told me that if I didn't pay my bills, I'd go to debtor's jail. So I was scared to go to jail, because I was really naive when I was drinking. You know, I just didn't grow at all from the time I turned about 14 and a half, something like that. And so she said yes. So I went home and went downtown to the Richmond Alcoholic. I'm not sure what it's called now. It's not there anymore. And I took the test, the 20 questions, and of course I answered all of them yes. And you know, I got an A plus on it. I don't think I missed one of them. So, you know, I knew, but that night, I meant to tell you this, that was a spiritual experience. I didn't want to forget that. That night it was lifted. You know, the compulsion to drink, the obsession, the desire was lifted. It just lifted right out of me. God lifted it from me. And that didn't mean I was feeling great mentally, spiritually, or physically, any of that. I was miserable. But the desire to drink and the ability to not drink was given to me. It was a gift, and it's my gift from God, my greatest gift from God. Actually, no, and it's probably another one that's greater than that, but that's what happened to me. And you know, and it's funny because as I went through treatment and all that, you know, I really learned a lot. You know, I worked a quick set of steps, you know, four step. It was just a quick thing. It wasn't real good because, you know, I'm brand new in sobriety and I don't even know, you know, I've got a big book and a 24-hour day and all that, but, you know, I don't think we were reading it. I think we were just going to classes. And the thing I thought I was going to be able to do was sleep late. No, they don't let you sleep late treatment. They get you up early. You got to go to the breakfast and you got to eat and they won't let you have any caffeine. And I was, you know, I loved coffee and Pepsis and stuff like that. So we'd go to the store and get some caffeinated drinks and come back. So, you know, treatment was kind of fun, really, because I had that taken from me. So I'm coming home from treatment. I was in a car that my parents had lent me to, well, they had brought the car there for me to drive it back home on the parents' weekend. And I was coming home and I thought, man, I am so happy. I was on cloud nine. I felt so good. It was nothing there to distract me. The real world, I hadn't gone into the real world yet. And it was so easy. So I come back to Richmond. I did get a sponsor. I started working the steps. Did pretty good on them. Went all the way through all 12. But, you know, it was like I had gotten a job. I was working, and which was a good job. In fact, I stayed at that job 27 years. And it was good for me, you know, and God brought me there. And so, you know, I wanted a relationship, you know, because I really hadn't had, I mean, I had a boyfriend, but he really wasn't a boyfriend. He was just kind of somebody that looked over me and talked, I mean, got me booze and stuff. And so I wanted a relationship. I wanted to get married. I wanted the house with a little white picket fence. So I'm out dancing with a friend of mine one night at one of those bars where I had no business being, and because I like to dance. And I, you know, I met this guy, and you know, he went to the same school as I did, and we just got together. You know, we took him hostage, he took me hostage, and we got married. Okay, I'm 18 months sober when I marry him. He is a full-fledged alcoholic. Well, you know what happened there. It did not last. In fact, I couldn't deal with it, you know, so I couldn't stay sober. I went through a lot. And I tell you, that's when I did my very, very thorough fourth and fifth step, is while I was in that relationship, because I ended up in the hospital with depression so bad about that relationship because I couldn't fix him. You know, I tried to fix him. I tried to cure him, all that stuff. He threw my big book at me. You know, I thought, okay, I think this is enough. So anyway, so the marriage didn't last. And I went to live by myself. And, you know, while I was living by myself, it was great. I like my own company. I enjoy being alone. I've always kind of been a loner in a way. But I love my friends. I have a lot of friends in AA today. I have several pigeons. And we get together every month and we do things in the summertime together. And these girls are great. You know, they've taught me more than I've taught them, I'm sure. And, you know, for me, Alcoholics is Not Anonymous has given me great friendships, people that I can count on, people that I know love me for who I am, no matter what. And they can see through whatever's on the outside to see what's inside. And that is what I love so much. You know, I had friends all through school, but they were not, you know, they were not the kind, you know, that's the kind you gossiped with and talked to girls about boys and all that kind of stuff. But in AA, you know, it's funny. I don't really like talking about all that stuff anymore. I like talking to AA. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous saved my life. It really did. And, you know, I do the things. Sometimes I rest on my laurels, but normally I will pray when I get up, third step prayer. I thank God for another day. I read my readings sometimes. I don't always read them every day. My husband over here gets on me about that. Have you read your readings today? Oh. So anyway, I do that. And then I call my sponsor. I meet with her once a week now. Through the holidays, we didn't get a chance to meet very much because I'm really busy. I have a big family and I have nine grandchildren. I'll explain that to you in a minute. I met my husband at a Valentine's dance in Richmond. It was February 91, and that husband is Henry, and he had seen me in the rooms. I got a long time, don't I? Wait a minute, what time am I supposed to be finished?
5-7.
Oh gosh, I gotta talk more. Okay, so I'd seen Henry in the rooms, and he'd seen me, and he had kind of gone to a couple of meetings he thought I'd be at. I didn't go to any meetings that I thought he'd be at because that's trolling, you know. I like to troll. He'll show up sooner or later. So Henry had come to a meeting in Richmond on Saturday night, and we said hi to each other. That was about it. Hi, and I ran. You know, anytime I liked somebody, I ran the other way. And you know, it was cool because I had that feeling, you know, what's going on here? And I had been divorced for a long time, probably seven or 8 years. I can't remember exactly. And I'd been alone. I'd had a few days. Gosh. That was what was interesting. I had talked to God and I'd said that morning, God, I am not going to go out with anybody for at least 6 months. 6 months, right? I thought that was a long time back then. And so I decided that I was going to work on me and my program, and I wasn't going out with anybody, and it was just no fun. And so I go to this dance with a friend of mine. And I walked in and I saw him across the room. And you know, and I was kind of like dressed up kind of a lot, like boots and a mini skirt and blouse and stuff, you know. And I was trying to be pretty, right? So he never came over to ask me to dance. So I went over there to him and asked him to dance. I said, I'm gonna go get him. So I did. And we danced, and he asked me for my phone number, and I said, "I'm not giving my phone number out." But I made that pledge to God that morning, right? So I gave him my work number, and I said, "You can have my work number." So he said, "Well, I've got to go pick up my boys." So I went, that's cool. He's leaving to pick up his boys, and I'm staying here, and. Yeah, I like that, but he's leaving me for them. Oh, you know, that was the bird brain again. But I was grateful. He was an upstanding man. You know, I knew that. That right at first, it was great. And so he asked me to go out with him. So we went out to lunch one day, and you know, and then he asked me over to his house one night for dessert, and I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure who was going to be the dessert. No, he actually had some very nice cakes and things there. And we talked and had fun and listened to music. And you know, we dated a long time. I think we got married a year and a half maybe later. We dated and I didn't live with him. I stayed over there a lot, but I didn't live with him. And sometimes my mother would call and Henry would say, "Hey, she Sue, wait a minute. Well, she's getting ready to go home, Maisie. So, Sue, it's your mama." Letting mama know that I was going home when I really wasn't going home. But anyway, so we married, and you know, when you got two alcoholics in the same house, both of us are fire signs, okay? And we battled. We battled. We had sponsors. We had counselors. We had all this stuff. You know, thank goodness. Don't give up before the miracle. That's for sure. Because we have a wonderful marriage today, a great marriage. And I'm very happy. And what I was going to tell you about the nine grandchildren, see, he had two boys. And each one of those boys have three. And then I have an, she's like my daughter. She's my niece. And she had three. So I have nine grandchildren, and I didn't have to have any babies. Isn't that wonderful? But you know, I don't know. It just didn't happen that way, and I'm okay with it. So going to share a little bit about my higher power. And my higher power is God, as I understand him. You know, I grew up in the Baptist church. I was told that God loved me. And I heard that all the way through. But when I started thinking about it, I didn't feel loved. I just thought of him in, you know, at first in the church. I thought about this old man up in the sky with staff and the long beard and, you know, all that stuff. That's kind of how I pictured God to be. And you know, that just didn't fit me, and it didn't feel right. So in my search for the God of my understanding, I found that my greatest fear was that I would not have a relationship with the God of my understanding. I had such a fear of that, and I grieved it. And I read the readings, and I read the books, and I did the steps. And like I told you, God relieved me of the bondage of self by lifting the alcohol addiction from me the night that I surrendered and started going to AA the ne not the next day, but started in my program the next day. And so, you know, it was like, he did that. What else has he done for you? Well, he's done a lot for me. And my search for him is daily because I never felt like I was really close to him. Some days I do. Sometimes I can feel it, feel him within me and within my heart and within my soul. And I cherish that because that was another experience that I had when I was getting, I mean, when I was many years into sobriety, I had this experience where God lifted all of the fear that I had that I would never know him. And so I work at that. I have to because I'm real good at disconnecting from the God of my understanding. You know, living in my ego does that. I disconnect. And you know, one of my greatest joys is knowing God. And but it's a daily practice. I mean, it's the kind of thing that I have to stay on top of. Daily reprieve based on my spiritual experience. I mean, spiritual. What is it? Spiritual condition. Yes. And sometimes, you know, sometimes to me, I get scared of it. You know, I can remember sitting down and reading my readings, but just feeling a little fearful. I'm not sure what I was afraid of. And, but now I know God exists, and where he exists is within me. He is within me. He's not, he's everywhere, okay? He's up there, or there, and there, but he's also within me. And that happened to me many, many years, 10 or 15 years ago. And ever since that, I have felt the presence of God within me. And that was the thing that I wanted more than anything in this world, and with my sobriety. And I continue to want to know him and be closer to him every day. So you know, the prayer and the meditation and the talking to your sponsor. My sponsor's really good. She loves to point things out to me. She talks about how much I complain. And she said, "You're probably not gonna like what I'm gonna say." And I said, "What? Please bring it on." She said, "You do complain a lot." And I said, "I know I do. My husband tells me that all the time." So I'm working on trying not to complain and just, oh my gosh. To be grateful, I am so grateful for all that I have. I mean, I've been blessed beyond measure. And when I, you know, the thing I need to remember is this. I'm here to be helpful. I'm only here to be helpful. That's what I'm told. I'm here to do what God wants me to do. I ask God to please tell me where He wants me to go, what He wants me to do, and to whom and what to say. And I'm not always willing to do that. There's things I don't like to do, but I do them. I try to do them anyway. You know, I don't like working. I don't like really working on things, but I have had to because otherwise I wouldn't have any sobriety. And so today, you know, I am happy, joyous, and free. There are ups and downs. Sure, there are days I had bouts with depression. I had bouts with depression from here and there. I've had it all my life, basically. Well, not all my life, but from high school, I have it like a. Sometimes it goes away and doesn't come back. Oh, it's gone forever now. And, you know, I think it has a lot to do with the way I take care of myself. You know, if I'm eating a bunch of sugar and smoking cigarettes and drinking coffee and eating food that's not good, I'm going to feel bad. In fact, I went about 2 years with no sugar. Well, not no sugar, but no candies and stuff like that. I ate, you know, the dressings had some sugar and stuff. And I felt great. I lost weight. I felt good about me, you know, and then once I started back about a year ago, I felt shame, you know, because I'm doing something to my body that I know is not good for my body. And I know God does not want me to do that to me. And so I have given up sugar for Lent. And I'm Baptist, but, you know, I think Baptists does a Lent too sometimes. But one more thing I wanted to tell you. Well, it's probably two more things. I have a God box. And I was given a God box early on, and I think I've given most of my girls a God box. I don't remember if I gave you one, Mary Beth, but anyway, anything that's bothering you, you write it down and put it in the God box, and you let it go. You just give it to God. Let it go if you can. You know, the best thing to do, I know me, when I have a problem and something's going on with me and I'm emotionally imbalanced, I'll try to fix it with whatever, you know, read the big book, call my sponsor, talk to my pigeons, talk to my husband. But when I can't, it doesn't go away, then I have to turn it over. I have to give it to God and say, okay, you've got it. I'm not going to worry about this anymore. And most of the time it's gone. And, you know, I wonder why I don't have better faith, because I have faith, actually, but nothing has ever happened in my life since I've been sober that hasn't worked out. You know, I'm afraid of this, afraid of that. It's not going to work out. I'm not going to have this. I'm not going to have. It always works out because eventually God works it out. So sometimes what I have to do is I tell God, I'm giving you this. And I can't wait to see how you work it out. Okay. I'm just going to stand back up here and not pay any attention. I'm not going to take it back, because that's the thing I did. I would give it to him, then I'd take it back and give it to him and take it. And so I said, why haven't you fixed it? And he said, God said to me, you never let it go. So, you know, I have to be willing to let go. And if I can't let go of something, I pray for the willingness to let go of it. And, you know, being an alcoholic in sobriety is not always easy. I'm just going to be honest with you. I'm not going to stand up here and say it's a bunch of roses and cherries and stuff like that. I mean, I have suffered through emotional pain through my sobriety, but I've had wonderful times of freedom and love and you know, but it comes and goes. But the pain is where I feel the growth. Once that pain releases and I surrender to it, that's when I feel my growth the most. So I don't think I can go through it without feeling some pain. You know, I'm an alcoholic in a normal world, or whatever that's called, you know, and it's no reason why I should think I'm supposed to be better than anybody else. I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, not drinking. I'm not anybody special just because I'm, well, an alcoholic, although I was very proud of it when I came in, like didn't give the credit to God. I have to give the credit to God. Everything I give credit to God because I'm a different person now, and I like myself today. I love myself today. I love you guys, and it's nothing y'all can do about it. Anyway, I think that's about enough for me tonight. I did want to say thank you, Mary Beth, for coming with me, and Henry, thank you for bringing me up here because I probably wouldn't have driven. I'm a little scared of the snow and the ice. And it was a pleasure being here. I just hope I said something that might be helpful to you. Thank you.
Thank you.